This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. That's it. There you go. Matt and Patrick here. Hi, Patrick. How are you, my friend?
Enjoying a beautiful day outside today.
Oh, it's gorgeous outside. Can I say this about, social media weather forecasters? All you people that were out there this morning, you're like, well, I guess winter's just around the colder considering how cold this last weekend was. Dude, what state do you think you're in? About 7 years ago, my son had a baseball game in Ham Lake. Oh, a lake of ham. Oh, God, is it delicious. We're up at Ham Lake. It is May 29th. I know this because it's my daughter's birthday. It was May 29th. It was snowing. It wasn't snowing heavy, but there were flakes in the air, and no one was wearing shorts and a t-shirt. That was on May 29th. I can't tell you how many fishing openers I have been to where I am decked out in full winter gear. Okay? What state? I mean, are we so poisoned now by climate change? Is it one of those things where people expect now it's like, well, it's May, it's got to be 85 degrees now, so... You wanted 85 in May. You need to move about 600 miles south of here, because then you'll get 80 degrees in May. It was weird. I mean, I was outside in this a lot this weekend. It wasn't the warmest May weekend, I'll be the first to admit, but it wasn't. Yeah, come on. I mean, it was 50s, high 50s, 60. It was a little cool for sure. And yeah, I think it was mid-40s when you'd wake up, but it was still mid-40s. I've lost garden items with hard freezes in May, for goodness. There was one year when I kept keeping an eye on the weather forecast, like, when do I plant my garden? Ended up not planting my garden until like the 30th of May because it was just cold, consistently cold the entire month. So come on. Act like you've been here before, for goodness sakes.
Oh, I guess winter's coming because we just had an October weekend.
It's not that funny, okay? And I do kind of wonder the fact that it wasn't just one person. Like, a lot of people posted this. I get it. You want to go on out there? It's bikini weather. Let's do it. All right, I'm all with that. I look fan freaking tastic in a bikini. FYI. That being said, it is May. My daughter went kayaking. Some of her friends have some kayaks. They went out kayaking, and she said, yeah, the water is pretty cold. I said, is it? It's May. It's, there was ice on it about a month ago. So, yeah, it should still be a bit nippy. just FYI. Matt's weather safety tip. It's been a while since we had Sven on the air with us, but it still hasn't. We haven't become Tulsa, Oklahoma here, okay? 952-946-6205. The most impressive thing I saw this weekend, how about that Twins game yesterday? That is a legit team.
That is absolutely, that's one of those games that, when you go, oh, it's a 162-game season, but there were games like that that define the way that your season is going to go, and that's one of them.
That was driving the nail into the coffin of the Royals. I mean, it's rare when you get to see a team's entire season come apart in May, but they were up 6-0 in the eighth inning. We had no right to come back in that game. No right. And we end up winning it. Oh, and just the tone when Urshela got that hit in the ninth and the winning run came across, the leading run, we took the lead for the first, was it Kepler came across and we took the lead?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my God. You could feel the dread and misery in Kansas City. Delicious. Hey, I hate White Sox fan more than anything else, but Royals fan, Guardians fan, you know, Detroit fan. Yeah, I don't have a warm spot for any of you clowns. But so it was delightful to watch Royals fan. Oh, God, was that just delicious. The best part of all, did you see that part? That was they were looking for the 2,000th win at Kauffman Stadium. They came into that series. All they had to do was win one game. They get beat on the first two games by the Twins fairly handily, too, in both of those games. They're up 6-0 in the eighth inning. They're saying to themselves, let's bring out the magic. Let's bring out the memories. I can just see the guys with like the big 2,000 cake in the hallway leading down to the dugouts, ready to wheel it out onto the field. Fireworks. We're going to have... Uh-oh. Make more room in the fridge. Oh, the Twins have redeemed me. I was the first one. They started 4-8. I was like, what the heck is up with this? And when they played in Kansas City the last time and they got swept, I was like, or they won one. But I'm like, come on.
Bad news for the Royals. I know we're not a sports station. We're definitely not a Kansas City sports station.
We're barely a talk station, man. Let's just be honest about it. All right, go ahead.
They're going to have to wait a while for their next home game. They don't have another home game until June 3rd.
Tell me that's like versus the Yankees or something like that.
It is the Astros, so just as equal these days on the hate meter.
Oh, yeah, but you're not going to be winning those games. I can tell you, not with that with that Royals monster lineup. And when I mean monster, I mean actually like 952-946-6205. It does bring up an interesting thing that I did when talking about sports, though. So this weekend, I spent a lot of it in beautiful Rosemont, Minnesota. Oh, is that a refinery I smell? Ugh, it is. I get it. You got to put them somewhere. But... if you're wondering, you know, is there a part of the metro area that really hasn't been developed yet? Go to Rosemont, because the Rosemont, Rosemont. You go down there, you go down 52. We had to go to Dakota County Technical School down there, which is off of what, 145th Street, I think it is, which is down there. That's down. I mean, you're what, 12 miles from Hastings at that point. So you're getting out there, but it reminds me of like Eden Prairie and Woodbury and most of Maple Grove in the 1980s. There was just nothing there. And it's weird when you go into a suburb that, you know, a lot of people allegedly live there and there's not a lot of people there. That was kind of interesting. I live in the beautiful Metroplex of Hopkins. I did drive four times to the Southeast Metro for soccer games with my oldest daughter. She was down there. Not the kayaker who was... No, this was going for soccer. I started the weekend. I had like 320 miles worth of gas. I got one of those... I got a Toyota Sienna. And if you get the Toyota Sienna, it will tell you how many more miles you have left on your tank of gas. So you can kind of keep an eye on it. It's not just a little meter there. It tells you how many miles you got, which is really cool. I love that. And I had 320 miles of gas when I started driving over there Saturday morning. I am down to about 40 miles left on that gas tank because it is... you know, basically empty and that's pretty much all the driving I did is I went out, you know, we went out there and came back. That was it. And it's remarkable. There came a point as I was looking around, there's a lot of kids out there. I mean, it was a fairly well-run soccer tournament. Give them credit down there, in Apple Valley and Rosemont they ran that fairly well. But as I realized the cost, I mean, that was basically $65 to $70 worth of gas alone. One of the teams my daughter's team played was from St. Michael Albertville. That's another 30 minutes from Hopkins just to get down there. You're on the road for almost an hour and 40 minutes. At that point, are you getting a hotel room? Because, and I'm dead serious. I mean, it's the same metro area. Minneapolis-St. Paul is a massive metro area. It's the same metro area, but that's forever. Now, I'm not sure the financial wherewithal of all the kids that were in the St. Michael Albertville area, but I got to just tell you, sure, I can afford it. Yeah. And I can top off the gas tank. That's no big deal. But are we getting to the point where with the cost of gas, we're creating yet another potential hurdle for a kid and a family to participate in like youth sports? Because if you've been in youth sports, I had a son that played baseball. I've got two girls that play soccer, one girl that does track as well. Just in the school district, conference that they're in, I got to go from Hopkins to Eden Prairie to Buffalo, St. Michael Albertville, Wayzata, Minnetonka. It's a fairly stretched out district. And yeah, if you have to, and God forbid you actually have to go to a game and starts at 4:30 on a weeknight, good luck getting there before the end of the game. You got a little bit of a drive ahead of you. Maybe if you left at lunch hour from your job, you might be able to make it up there. But then, of course, not only do you have, like, if you're part of the school conference, if your kid plays in the school league, you're going to have games all around. And I'm not talking about the occasional game we'll have with, say, like a Farmington, where we have to go down and play Farmington, or we have to go over to Minneapolis and play. I'm just talking on the conferences, the home and away schedule. You got to play a game at Buffalo. You got to play a game at St. Michael Albertville. But if they play in, like, a club scene, then you are playing in tournaments for the most part. And we've had tournaments in Woodbury, beautiful Woodbury. I love Woodbury. It's very nice. Apple Valley Rosemont had a nice time down there in the southeast side of town. Little bit of a refinery potpourri, I guess you could say. I've had, there's been tournaments we've been involved in, you know, just right down the street from us as well. But one of the deals is if you're part of this, you're part of these tournaments. There's generally a tournament in like Duluth or in Rochester. You know, sometimes you're even going to the Dakotas or into Wisconsin to play a tournament. Are we creating, because these tournaments, because you just don't play, there's not like just four local tournaments within 5-10 miles of your house you can play in. Are we creating another barrier for families that don't have the discretionary income to drop $70 just for gas to get a kid to a soccer tournament from playing sports? And I've talked about this subject before, especially as I went through it. I mean, I remember when my son was 13 and you'd start running into parents and very wealthy parents who made this seem like you had to do this if you were going to give your kid a chance, which to a point they were right, where they were sending their kid out to play in weekend tournaments in Vegas, Miami, crap like that, Phoenix. And it was, you know, $3,000 just for the kid, no guarantee of playtime, which, you know, trust me, your kid's riding the pine the entire time. Might get one at bat. Good luck with that. But it's, and they say, well, you get to keep the uniform. Well, I'd hope you get to keep the uniform at $3,000 freaking. Jeez. But that's these wealthy parents would swear by that. This is, you got to do this. This is the only chance. If you want your kid to play college ball, you know, you got to go out there. And yeah, I am middle class. I'd even go as far as saying probably borderline upper middle class. I couldn't afford crap like that. Are you kidding me? Send a kid 3 times, 4 times a year at $3,000, $4,000 to some far-reaching part of the country to go play a sport, for goodness sakes. But I'm going to be honest, the guy wasn't lying. The families that did that, the wealthy families that had that money, and a lot of those kids went on to play college ball. You have to go do club teams, which are, you know, $3,000 for a 3-month stint. And once again, no guaranteed play time. And trust me, if your kid's not playing, he's picking up the trash in the dugout that the other kids leave behind because they look at your kid as, you know, the servant on the team. That's kind of the way they look at it. You look at and that's not including just your local league, which is still $300, $400, $500, sometimes $800, $900. Depending on the sport, baseball, dear God, bats, $300. Gloves, cleats, uniforms. It's all pricey, man. And I've talked about in the past as well that one of the problems that you end up having with this stuff is that it has become a wealthy for wealthy people only sort of thing. And that's the crime, is that we created college sports scholarships because that was supposed to be for a way where a kid who might be a good student but parents could not afford to go to college could go to college and play a sport and that way be able to offset their cost of their college education by going and playing sports. That was the concept when they started them. Now, for God's sakes, almost all those scholarships, almost all of them are pegged to wealthier kids. Football is probably the one exception because you just their teams are so large and there are a lot of people that, you know, they just, you, especially in the South, you can get a pretty decent training regimen just within the schools and down there. So football to a point is different, but I don't know a kid who's gotten a scholarship to hockey, soccer, baseball. I don't know one of them that it wasn't actually coming from a family that was upper class or at least upper middle class. And now, just a simple thing of just going to the freaking tournament is $70. That's not with any food. That's not with any, you know, buying a bottle of water. That's not with getting a hotel room. If, God forbid, you have to go, you know, in 2 hours and you say, I'll just stay here overnight. I mean, it's getting to the point where I think we're going to have to start rethinking this because you wonder why participation rates in sports are going down. Well, just take a look at your gas tank every time you have to drive to the other side of the metro area for a weekend tournament. And sure, I didn't necessarily have to drive four times over. I could have driven over once on Saturday and then driven back after the second game. But the second game was, what, 7 hours later. So, and nothing against the fine city of Rosemont. Oh, beautiful. But no. I wasn't playing. I had yard work I got to get done. Yard looks fantastic, by the way. Have I mentioned that? The yard looks fantastic. I'm very happy with the flower gardens, vegetables. Everything's looking good. I have other things. I have a child who's out in a canoe in the middle of the lake in May. So I got to get back here just in case I have to go over there and find her. clinging to a kayak like Leonardo DiCaprio before Rose rips those hands off that door and says, bye, you know, good luck. Near, far, wherever you are, but you're pretty far now, bye. Do not ever watch a serious movie with me. I have a bad habit of Mystery Science Theater 3000, okay? I really do. No, I think that it is an interesting problem that you have because we all talk about, well, we want diversity and we want more people playing and we want to do this. Well, then make it affordable. Don't cripple people's budgets by basically making them buy $500 worth of equipment on top of $1,000 worth of an entry fee. And maybe consider our six tournaments all over the place where you're having to, you know, where middle class families are being taxed pretty hard right now on gas prices, hotel prices, restaurant prices. Maybe just say, hey, is there a tournament within 10 miles of us that, you know, everyone can participate in? Because that would save a lot of people a lot of money and actually might increase the participation. Just saying. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When I come back, we got to break down what did and did not happen in regards to the weekend and the budget and the deals and try to keep up to date on whether or not they are called a special session yet. We'll keep looking at that and see if that has come on down. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. So, Patrick, let's keep an eye on if Walls does call for a special session. It sounds like I'm wondering if things are actually going to happen. I am of the mindset after what happened in the Capitol that I think the Republicans are trying to not pass certain things and just hoping things go their way. And then they'll basically say, well, we'll pass everything next year. And the reality is I, first of all, I don't think things are going to go nearly as well for the Republicans in the state of Minnesota as they think that they're going to go. Especially when, you know, let's say we can go with Dr. Loonball, who's out there, disapproving of vaccines, the doctor who disapproves of vaccines, the mystery AG. On one side, you have Wardlow. On the other side, you have the guy who basically says, I want to jail and imprison any woman that basically makes a decision about her own reproductive health. Good luck with that. And then there's Crazy Train Secretary of State. Yeah, good luck with her. The anti-Semitic video, really just a delight. Anywho, I do not necessarily think the Republicans are going to try to make a deal, because I think that they would rather, you know, then they can bellyache when they lose and they lose the Senate. And if Walz wins again and the House stays in the Democrats' hand, but these Democrats are basically jamming this down our throat. Dude, man, you had a chance to pass a compromise bill and you said no. Now, not all the bills. A lot of bills got passed, but let's go through this. But first of all, I'll start off and I'll quote the story that I'm calling for. The first one, I believe, is MinnPost. The unusual dynamics of the 2022 session of the Minnesota legislature created circumstances for its particular collapse on Sunday evening when the House and Senate ended the regular session without passing most tax and spending bills. With more money to spend than any previous number legislature, there were resources to do some of what both Republicans and DFLers wanted: tax cuts, new spending, even additional savings. Having $9.25 billion in surplus and more than $1.1 billion in federal cash from the American Rescue Plan meant both parties could get some of what they wanted. Expectations were raised among rank-and-file lawmakers, but coming amid a two-year budget and without an election looming, failure was an option. The government won't shut down if none of the spending and tax bills pass. Governor Walz's threats to not call a special session may have served as a catalyst for action, but in the end, it didn't push lawmakers towards success and may not have actually been true. As Sunday came Monday, House Speaker Hortman said she'd accepted Walz's invitation to meet to decide how and when to convene a special session. Past practice for Walz has been to require agreement on bills before he calls sessions. He said that he would be the plan again. There is a relatively brief window of time within which we need to have an agreement that makes sense to come in and finish up, Hortman said, adding that the window was this week before the Memorial Day weekend. I think all the bills are close enough that it would be within a day or two. Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller seemed less interested. We've had members from the Senate working darn around the clock for a week. Oh, please. You guys were pushing off this all week long. What's one or two more days going to do? Well, we're not interested in a special session. Well, he said he was willing to listen. I'll never say never. It was better for everyone to return to their districts. You even had Kurt Dowd, the minority leader in the House, say, we'll go back and 7 months later, we'll make a decision. Okay. Someone asked him, it's like, what are you, a bear? Or are you hibernating? Both houses adjourned around midnight. Both will come back in on Monday, but can't pass bills. Walz said lawmakers are close to deals and will finish this. We have to, Walz. He said the idea of a clock strike midnight to turn into a pumpkin or something. No, we've had special sessions every single time because work needs to get done. The failure wasn't a surprise. A little before 10 p.m., 2 hours before the end of the 2022 regular session, House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler acknowledged that he would not be wrapped up before midnight. By the way, can I say that there seems to have been a new game plan for Republicans, where Republicans very much, almost across the board, agreed to compromise bills before they went into conference committee, where they had to work out the details between the House and the Senate. And there definitely seems to be this mentality that the Republicans, we're willing to work with the other side and to actually have said, we have deals. Maybe not firm, but very clear that the framework for each of these bills was set. And yet the Republicans, all of a sudden, when it came time to actually do this, basically, you know, tried to take their toys and go on home. Ryan Winkler said, if we're going to do these bills, they need to be in special session. We're ready to go. We just need the major bills to come together, and they're doing everything, should be ready to start going. Those major bills are on education, transportation, public safety, and judiciary, and health and human services. Winkler questioned Miller's claim that the Senate GOP wouldn't be interested in a special session. If we reach agreement on the major bills, including the tax bill, which has... And by the way, once again, Democrats, you know you're doing it right. Keep that tax bill as a hostage. You keep the tax bill as a hostage because the Republicans, if they pass the tax bill, I guarantee you nothing else would have gotten passed. The only reason anything got passed was because the Republicans are desperate to get that tax bill passed. So the tax bill has $4 billion in tax cuts. I've heard a hard time believing Republicans say, nah, we won't show up. There's a deal on the tax bill. It was agreed to by the House DFL and the Senate GOP on Saturday, but the House leaders would not pass it until they're sure the GOP spending bills are going to pass the Senate. Or the big spending bills, I should say, are past the Senate. This is an all-in kind of scenario. A few things that were accomplished on Sunday, a drought relief package and a new investment in rural broadband installation were sent to Walz. If nothing further is passed, minus already adopted bills that can include spending on unemployment insurance, extending the state's reinsurance program, sending bonus checks to pandemic workers, and funding additional pandemic response, the money stays in the bank. If the economy cooperates, it will be up to the legislature and governor elected in November to decide what to do with the cash in the budget year 2023. So, once again, Republicans don't seem to have been very interested. It's interesting because I wonder if right now the argument is, you give us the tax bill, going back to the list of the bills, let's see, where is it, the list of the bills that they are working on right now. Forgive me here. I'm shuffling through my briefs here. I'll find it. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. Come on back. Because my guess is going to be is the Republicans are going to try to say, well, you give us the tax bill, we'll give you these bills. It's going to be a hostage situation. We'll see if that's the case, but I'll talk about that when we come on back. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. We can just play this for a while, man. I love good Zydeco, man. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Well, let me just go to the authority, Brianna Beerschbach, who, once again, I'm going to get her on the air this week. I'm going to get Brianna back on the air. We haven't had her on forever. God, I love her writing. There are a few people in town that are worth their weight in gold. Brianna Beerschbach is one of them. Andy Mannix is another. Susan Dew, the crew over at Racket, everyone over at the Reformer. Dana Ferguson, I'm a big fan of as well. Tori Van Oot over at Axios. There are some good ones out there, and Brianna is one of my favorites. She has this update for us. So I don't know how hard we need to keep pressing the social media thing here. Governor Walz said he had a good meeting with Minnesota legislative leaders. These are all good things for Minnesota, and they can be done. He said the leaders and the members need to go home and decompress. I remain hopeful. Walz said Senate Leader Miller asked for a couple days to go home and talk it over. They did not close the door, but they did not give a timeline, he said, of the legislative leaders. What they're basically doing is going back and saying, how mad are the voters going to be at us for not getting stuff done? That's what this all comes down to. Now, I did go back and here are the bills. Once again, education, transportation, public safety and judiciary, and health and human services, along with the tax bill. Now, don't fool yourself. The Republicans, they act like they want public safety passed. It's far more politically advantageous to them basically say, we tried to pass a public safety bill to show that we're blindly obedient to the police. But the Democrats stopped that bill. So there is no intent by them to probably pass the public safety and judiciary, because that's basically their entire campaign outside of, for God's sakes, don't look at our candidates. They're psychopaths. Don't look at them. Paraphrasing. So my guess would be when you look at this list of bills, education, transportation, and health and human services, plus the tax bill. My gut feeling is the Republicans do not want to pass the education bill. Do not. So if they do come back, and I think they will, because that is a lot. They got a lot of concessions in the tax bill because there was so much money. They got a lot of concessions, and I guarantee you, if they don't have a guarantee they're going to win next fall, they're going to come scrambling back in here to try to get what they can right now. But what they're going to do is say, tell you what, we will, if you're willing to pass the tax bill, we'll do health and human services and transportation, but nothing else. And that will be that. I really do not think that they want to pass the education bill. So I think that that's going to be the argument, and whether or not. And once again, it comes back to whether or not the their voters, if their voters are upset with them, and I'll get to that more in the second hour. If their voters get upset with them, then they basically will come back frantically. Or if it looks like they're going to lose a lot of the secondary ring or tertiary ring Senate seats that they current have, and they might not have the Senate anymore, then they'll frantically, hey, Governor Walz, can you imagine? Actually, I could see that. Let's say they think they got a chance, and then they lose both the House and the Senate, and Walz gets reelected. I can see Jeremy Miller coming in on the day after the election going, hey, Governor Walz, remember when you said we'd be willing to do a special session? Hey, we'll pass all those bills if we could get the tax bill done. That would be great. And if you're a Democrat, you look at them and go, enjoy being in the minority, you clown cars. So that would be my guess. All right, so let's go more at coverage of what did and did not happen. Special session is probable. This is what the Bring Me the News guys are saying. Walz clearly wants to make this special session happen sooner. Republicans clearly are pushing back. Here's a look at what some of the major bills that have been agreed to during the legislative session and which ones did not cross the line before Sunday's deadline. The tax relief package. The conference committee struck an agreement on taxes, but it was not agreed upon by both legislative bodies before Sunday's legislative deadline. Minnesotans will not benefit from these tax cuts unless the governor calls a special session. The Senate's provision included an elimination of all income taxes on Social Security benefits. The House's version included property tax relief, primarily in the form of making the renter's credit into a refundable income tax credit. Both made it into the final version of the bill, as did a cut for the 5.35% state income tax bracket to 5.1%. So basically, like I said, there was a lot of concessions for the Republicans there. The taxes would be reduced by $1.4 billion in total in the current biennium and $2.4 billion in the next one. Other tax benefits go as follows: an increased child and dependent tax credit with higher threshold for phase out, a refundable tax credit for people whose natural gas bills soared in February 2021 due to the polar vortex. Due to Texas being a bunch of morons, how about we say it like that? A higher income threshold for those eligible for the K-12 education tax credit, an extension of the small business investment tax credit, eligibility modifications for the beginning farmer tax credit, a military pension subcontract subtraction with expanded eligibility, and increase in the second tier rate of research and development credit from 4% to 4.25%. Other reductions that would have made it in accordance with the measure include $36.1 million in corporate and franchise taxes. Do we really need to give? Never mind. 15.9% in the statewide general property tax, $11.3 million in sales and use taxes, $1.1 million in estate taxes. The bill also includes $44 million in increase in local government aid. So, like I said, Republicans have a lot of things in that bill that they're going to want. And if it looks like they might lose either the House or the Senate and they're not going to be able to get that bill again, well, I guarantee you, yeah, they're going to, my guess is they're going to come back at least for that. But the question that comes, like I said, the question that comes to me is that they're going to allow certain other bills to go forward. I just do not think the education bill is on the Republicans' agenda. And that if the education bill is not part of it, would the Democrats and Walz go ahead with it? I guarantee, I don't think they would. So that's going to be out there. Frontline workers, unemployment insurance, COVID response package. This bill was agreed on by both the House and the Senate and signed off by Governor Walz earlier in the session. There you go. The House and Senate agreed to spend $4.3 billion on reserves and federal American Rescue Plan money on insurance, employment insurance fixes, checks for some frontline workers, and COVID funding. $2.7 billion goes towards repaying federal borrowing that kept uninsured checks flowing during the pandemic. $500 million will be distributed to 670,000 healthcare, food service, and emergency workers who stayed on the job in the early months of the pandemic. $190 million can be spent on variants of ways related to pandemic costs, such as additional vaccinations, tests, and healthcare staffing, and $891 million subsidies rates for individuals and small group health insurance customers who have high medical costs. So, a win there. The liquor bill. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Was the grotto going to be in the liquor bill? They canned the grotto idea. The Republicans were going to have their little party room off to the side in the state capitol, as I called it, the grotto. And I don't think that went through. But the state liquor laws have been modernized with passing this bill, signed off by Governor Walz over the weekend. Large craft brewers can now sell growlers and crawlers out of the tap rooms. Smaller craft brewers can sell bottles and cans out of tap rooms. Distilleries can sell directly to the consumer while also providing cocktail rooms for their establishments. Booze! Sales of wine and beer can now happen in town ball games. How bad is your team? Oh, what are we talking about? It's just the game won't even matter. It's you can go get schnockered out of the field. That's what matters. Resorts can now serve alcohol with a higher than 3.2. Really? I didn't realize resorts were still under that. I thought that one got fixed a while back. An extension of alcohol sales is now in effect for live World Cup matches. I guess so in case, well, they're playing over in Qatar, right? So how many hours difference is that?
Yeah, I think that was the thing was going to be, that's going to be morning times for those.
Ah, get your day drinking started early, kids. So, yeah, what are they? I think they're like 10 hours. So, if it's like 7 a.m., it'd be 5 p.m. All right, so, go team, go. Anoka can create outdoor social district where consumption of alcohol is permitted. Are you ready for it? All right. Isn't that just Anoka? There you go, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here all week. Sorry, Anoka. I've been to your town, though, and I don't think people are following the rules up there about a special social district where the consumption of alcohol is permitted. I'm just saying. Welcome to Anoka. Addressing the previous issue of the Coleman Act that prohibits exclusive contracts and the sale of hard spirits by treating in-state and out-state manufacturers similarly. Okay. Good deal. Education bill. Lawmakers could not agree on how to spend the agreed additional $1 billion on education. Differences remain on how much to put towards boosting funds to cover school districts. Special education costs. More than 65K Minnesota students would receive an increase in state grants, increasing opportunities for students to become debt-free in relation to higher education. Both parties remain divided on how to improve the students' literacy. Here's why. You asked, Matt, why do you think the education bill, the Republicans have no intent of passing that? I want to go back to when they first put their bill out. And Education Minnesota did a phenomenal job of educating people, and what they do, on what was in the bills. And they would list every individual school district under the DFL plan, got, $3 million new dollars, got $4 million new dollars, got $800,000, depending on the size of the school district. And they compared that to the amount of money the Republicans were going to put into every school district, which, regardless of where it was zero. The Republicans had no intent to pass an education bill this year. That was clear when they basically their entire education bill was what? $800,000 for literacy programs? That was it? That was their entire commitment, was $800,000 or something like that to literacy programs. They had no intention of passing an education bill. And so my gut feeling is that even if they have to pass an education bill, they'll walk away from the tax bill because they do not want to actually fix the problems of the education system. They don't want to pay it's twofold. One, they want to basically pay for wealthy people to send their kids to private school at the taxpayer expense. They want that in there. And then on top of that, they want to kill the teachers union. And if they can't do both of those, they'll walk away. And that seems to be where you're at right now. The public safety bill that failed to pass to reach agreement on the legislative floor. Senate Republicans want to spend heavily on recruiting and retaining police officers. Senate Republicans also, I can't say that joke. Senate Republicans also wanted to propose tougher policies on for longer criminal sentences or new expanded crimes. House DFL members vouched for boosting criminal investigations and non-police initiatives, such as money for community nonprofits that do violence intervention work. Major differences remain how to address violent crime. I don't know if that one's going to go through. And once again, I don't think the Republicans want this one to pass because they would rather say the bill didn't pass than pass a bill, even if they got most of the concessions that they could campaign on, because I think they feel as if it's a better argument for them in the election cycle to say the Democrats did not pass this bill. So, tell you what, let's take a break. Come on back. More on what did pass, what didn't pass when we do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I'm going to make a call that liquor is going to be sold out real fast in this town. Outstanding, Minocqua. Outstanding. Freaking standing. By the way, I'm about to get to the ag bill. Representative Sundin is going to join us tomorrow. He's the chair. He's not running. He's 11A. He is not running for re-election this year, but he's the House chair of the Ag and Finance Policy Committee. We'll talk to him about it. That bill is actually pretty good. As a matter of fact, there's a lot in there. Passed with bipartisan support on Sunday. It heads to the governor's desk for approval. Walz has voiced his support for the package, is expected to sign it. A combined $128 million will be broken up in the following ways. $18.4 million to address drought and disaster relief for livestock and specialty crop farmers. $8.1 million will go to livestock and specialty crop farmer aid. $2.5 million to drought relief loans. $5.3 million to drought-killed seedlings. $3 million for animal disease testing equipment for the state currently faces chronic wasting disease, avian flu outbreak, and others. So they're going to get that. That's going to go to the University of Minnesota, so they'll be able to make diagnoses faster. $110 million to help build more reliable high-speed internet infrastructure. Thank you, Democrats. You put that in there. Nicely done. $50 million in state money will be spent over the next 3 years on broadband grants. And $60.7 million from capital projects will be funded to build support broadband infrastructure. So once again, a lot for broadband. Now, I want to bring up a point. I'm not exactly sure why, but a lot of Republicans in the House changed their mind. Not a single Republican voted for this ag bill. It got bipartisan support in the Senate, where Westrum was the co-sponsor of the bill up there. And so there were Republican votes there. That's how it got passed. But if you are a Republican or you are challenging a Republican in a House district, especially anywhere there's farms or really crappy internet, do not allow the Republicans to take credit for this. And as a matter of fact, if you're the DFL, I'd be buying up every freaking billboard you can in rural Minnesota saying, hey, by the way, broadband is coming for you, but not because of any of the Republican House reps. They all voted against it. Hey, guess what? We got Farm Aid coming for you, but guess what? Republican House reps, they voted against it. Don't give those people credit for what they didn't do. Absolutely. You got to go on out there and be a lot more stringent. They didn't vote for it. And they're going to go on out there and campaign saying, look what I got done. You voted against it. You cannot take credit for a bill you actively tried to kill. You just can't. Mental health package passed with bipartisan support on Sunday. Now heads to the governor's desk for approval. Walz has voiced his support for the bill in the past, is expected to sign it. $92.7 million fund mental health programs and initiatives, such as establishing loan forgiveness for mental health professionals. Great idea. Expanding the use of mobile crisis service teams. Great idea. Fund school-linked mental health grants to increase accessibility for children and youth who are uninsured. Fantastic idea. Pay for expanding medical health services to criminal defendants deemed incompetent to stand trial. A state competency restoration board will be established for the judicial branch, funded with $22.3 million. The board will also hire and oversee forensic navigators. This duty includes coordinating mental health services to criminal defendants deemed incompetent to stand trial. and $1 million for licensed community mental health center specializing in services for African-American children and families. We have talked about the fact that the loan forgiveness for mental health professionals, that you got to figure out a way for them to basically be able to do the, we've talked about the faults in the system that prevent them from being able to get out there and offer medical mental health aid quickly and more efficiently. I think that that's a great idea. So there are some things that got passed. There's a lot of things that did not get passed. I probably will talk a little bit more about this coming up here. Once again, just an update from Brianna Beerspach over at the Star Trib. It sounds like the governor is willing to do a special session to get these, because it sounds like a lot of these bills were for the most part agreed on. It just is they didn't get a time to vote on them. He's okay with a special session. The reality is the Republicans, I think right now, are going back to their districts and saying, well, will everybody be upset if I don't pass the tax bill? Will everybody be upset if we don't pass an education bill? Will everybody be upset if they don't pass a public safety bill? You know, it'll be interesting to see. And like I said, next hour, I'm going to get into something with the Republicans and talk a little bit more about the game that they're able to play when it comes to stuff like this. Of course, as I just mentioned with the ag bill, it passed, but not a single House Republican voted for it. Yet every House Republican will take credit for it. And if you keep thinking to yourself, well, the voters will know the difference. No, they won't. You got to get out there and hammer away on this, because the voters who vote Republican right now, they're not too interested in reality. I'll share that with you coming up in the next hour. 952-946-6205. We're back in just a few minutes. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Hour number two on your Monday. Good to be with you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. By the way, on the broadband thing, Mark, making you can watch the radio show if you like. Okay. Like I said, this thing has changed a little bit since I started working in the industry. When I started working in the industry, I was kind of like a kind of a shut it, you know, just no one ever, you couldn't see me, but here you are. You get to view this magical splendor if you so like on Facebook. Just go to AM 950 Radio on Facebook or go to Matt McNeil Show Progressive Citizen X. Hello. And there you are. He made the point on the comment section there that they need to make sure there's oversight on the broadband stuff, because he is, and he's right. That is, broadband money has been abused, not just here in Minnesota, but across the country. That has been, it's rough. It is rough when you see how much of it has been, you know, kind of misused and kind of, I don't want to say stolen, but taken. How about I say it like that? I mean, just, you know, people are, it gets shifted into, well, we got some bonuses we got to play out first before we build anything. Oh, really? Okay. We got some kickbacks to pay. Well. So I hope there's some oversight on that there to make sure that goes well. I'll get more back into that once again here with Axios' story on this. But I did want to say, Patrick, when it comes to fast food restaurants, what is your favorite fast food restaurant?
Oh, that's a tough call.
How bad do I want to feel tonight?
Well, you start and I'll think about it.
Oh, me start? Okay. Okay. So first of all, I have to say, I work in an industry where fast food is something that you eat a lot of. And I think about the days when I used to eat like beef and cheddars from Arby's. And I realize, how am I still alive? I mean, is it the preservatives that were in that food that kept me alive? Was it the cheese sauce? Because that wasn't cheese. I know that. Well, that for a fact. It wasn't cheesy, okay, flavored. But I mean, I don't think that came out of France or Italy or anything like that. So I like that. Today, I do like one of those Popeye chicken sandwiches. Those are tasty.
Tough to argue against Popeyes, and the one I keep coming back to is Culver's, which I know was an easy answer, but it's good.
Suck up. Actually, no, they do a pretty good job, and they're not bad. I will say that. Shake Shack, although we need more of them. I would make an argument on that.
Yeah, Shake Shack is good, but they're expensive.
Yeah, they are pricey. There's a reason why they only put them in. We have one in a diner. Look, we're slumming it tonight by having a Shake Shack. That kind of thing. Yeah, I get that. There's a lot of change. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, we'd drive across the country and you'd feed, like, Roy Rogers. Did you ever eat at a Roy Rogers?
I did not know.
Oh, sign of the cross. I did. I don't know how much of that burger was Roy, but you go try different restaurants across the country. I always remember that. One that I'm amazed is it just is really kind of a regional thing is White Castle. Do you enjoy the White Castle every once in a while?
I do get the crave once in a while.
Yeah, there's nothing. They do go okay there.
Now, I'll give the caveat. I don't like breakfast, and White Castle is one of the few places, if I have to be up and about early in the morning, that I know I can get lunch.
You can, okay. What? I was about to say, would they have a breakfast there? They steam the burgers, don't they, with the holes in them?
Yeah, no, they do have some breakfast items these days, but they have a full meal. You can get sliders at 8 a.m.
Mm, boy, nothing better for the office conference room than... There, whoa, yikes, you smell like a refinery in Rosemont. What have you been eating there, Patrick? I got a crave case. Boy, breakfast is served with an egg. Put an egg on the side, use it as a dipping in there. White Castle, I got an uncle who, okay, now when I say I have an uncle who loves White Castle, the image of the individual that you've just come across lives kind of in the UP off by himself. Yeah, that's him. Yeah, it's you got it. Apparently, he went to college in the Detroit metro area, and he loved them when they were out there. I think it's fun when you drive around the city and you see all the old buildings that used to be White Castles. There's one that's over in St. Louis Park. There's one over on... Is it Lindale in 36? There's one that used to be a White Castle over there. Yeah, I love the building. You can't mistake. The building was a great draw back then. Have you ever been in one of the old original White Castle buildings?
Yeah, there's one I think up off of Central in Anoka, kind of by Highway 10.
Okay.
I'm sure that's not original because that's, you know, not that. But it's kind of a tiny little white building.
One of those things like McDonald's does where they rebuild the old kind of retro style. And
yeah,
some of those,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm wondering if are there any of the old original White Castle buildings still in use? I doubt it because I don't think they had drive-thrus on and pretty much all of them have drive-thrus. And all of them had a parking lot that could like seat like six cars. Well, good news for you. You're getting sliders for breakfast. You might be up for this list. Two Minnesotans have been inducted into the White Castle 2021 Class of the Cravers Hall. Not a joke. I thought originally when I read that story, it said Cravers Hell. But no, it's a hall. It's a Hall of Fame for White Castle. Class of Cravers Hall of Fame 2021. J.W. Peck from Minneapolis and Eric Goller of Woodbury, both have been inducted into this honor. We'll go with honor. Gollers from Woodbury. The two are 10 local people, 10 total people rather, inducted into the Burger Joints Hall of Fame on Thursday. They have to have the Beastie Boys have got to be in there. Didn't they have a song about White Castle?
I couldn't say for sure.
I think it was Licensed to Ill. I think they did. They've got to be in there as well. So you're in a Hall of Fame. I'm presuming you're in the Hall of Fame with the Beastie Boys, so that's a pretty good thing. I'm going to presume that. The inductees were chosen from a large amount of entries that all showed just how far some people will go to satisfy their White Castle crave, the announcement read in part. The Hall of Fame has existed since 2001. As of 2021, 232 total inductees have been honored with the award. Nominations for next year's induction can be submitted online through the White Castle website. Peck was recognized for going on a first date with his future wife, Paula, over 20 years ago, bringing with him lilies and a six-pack of frozen White Castle hamburger sliders. I'm going to make the argument they probably didn't kiss till the second date. I'm just going to say, maybe if they ate the lilies. Sorry. Sorry. I'm sure it was romantic. It sounds lovely, sir. And if you like the taste of White Castle, then pucker up, I guess. The Pecks recently celebrated their 20th anniversary, saying they still crave each other and their slider dates to this day. By the way, do not search slider dates on the internet. You're not going to no. It's going to go wrong. No. Goller's story comes from the Sports Connection. He was the vice skipper of a Minnesota curling team called the Team Sliders. He, along with his teammates, love White Castle. According to the Honor, Goller and his high school friends, the 1980s, often stopped at the White Bear Lake location after all sorts of events, movies, practice, games, et cetera. Sorry. It turned out the group's go-to spot. They are now regulars at White Castle, a location in Blaine, close to where the training facility is located. I'm kind of getting the impression curling is like a sport like bowling, where you really, it's not about physical fitness. It's more about just the fun of it all. Oh, God. Can you imagine if they went to like the sliding arena, the curling arena, and brought that in? And so that wafting, oh. Now, all right. I'll be the first to say it. I occasionally get the crave myself. I do, occasionally. Not often. Doesn't nearly agree with my digestive system like it did when I was in my 20s. Just going to let you know. At 53, I can see the entire GI tract's going, are you sure you want to do this? You really sure? You do want to sleep tonight, right? Okay, well, it's up to you. Would I ever want to be in a fast food restaurant's Hall of Fame? I don't know if that's a claim to fame I would want to be. What did you do? I ate lots of burgers.
It kind of seems like the kind of thing that somebody would go, that's kind of cool in the not so cool kind of way. Like, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have a life? What are you doing?
Here's where I'll give them credit. It's not like the McDonald's story you always hear. They just had the one guy in Wisconsin. I've been eating Big Macs every day for 269 years. And speaking of 269, that's how long it will take to clear out of your system, sir. But I'd rather have this, the cute little wedding story, the curling team that's getting their sliders, their crave case. I'd rather have that story than just, I don't have any, there's no other fast food choices in my town, so I'm just redundant.
I didn't follow the McDonald's guy that closely, but how did this come to the attention of the company? Like, hey, let's send a bunch of media out here to watch this guy eat his Big Mac, you know, no different than any other day, except it's different today because it's some milestone day.
Was there possibly someone going clear at that point? I mean, I'm just going to ask the question. Was the story, there's two ways you can present the story. The one way is, wow, you've had a Big Mac every day for your entire life. The other way to present it is, oh my God, he's had a Big Mac every day for his entire life? Get him to the ambulance stat. It's one of those two things. Fast food is something a lot of people enjoy. And there's a lot of people that go on out even vegetarian, vegan options that are out there that people go out there and enjoy. We all have kind of this stuff. It's as Jim Gaffigan said, we all have McDonald's. It's you might have People Magazine, but it's still McDonald's. And that's he's exactly right. And I'm not going to act as if I've never gone out there and gotten fast food. Of course, I've eaten tons of fast food in my life. I can't do it nearly as much anymore. And I don't know if I'd do it on a first date. Unless it was kind of like, you know, hey, by the way, I was going to get some sliders because I got a coupon. Are you okay with that? You know, I don't know if that would be the case. Or, you know, and it's nice that you find all your friends that you go curling with. They all enjoy it. But the reality is I'm not on any higher than that. For God's sakes, go out and enjoy White Castle. It just is more of the kind of thing of, would I want that, though? Would I want that? When someone came to me and said, you're such a loyal customer to our fast food franchise that we're going to put you in our Hall of Fame. Part of me goes, really? Yikes. Really? No, God, I need to go reevaluate my life. I got to go back to college or something because this is really. But if the Beastie Boys are in there, okay, I wouldn't mind being in that Hall of Fame. I would not. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Enough frivolousness on that. Let's take a break. Come on back. Minnesota coronavirus update. And I'm going to get to that point about accountability for Republicans. And we'll talk about that when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Let me get into the Minnesota coronavirus update here, and this will lead me to my point I want to make about the Republicans. First of all, the numbers here. For Monday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,152 newly reported cases, 9 reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll is now 12,596. And yes, these BA2 and BA2121 or 1121, whatever they are. The two variants that we got out there right now, they are not as deadly, they don't seem, as to Omicron, the original Omicron, or to Delta, but they're still deadly. They're still deadly. And so you better, yeah, I know there's a lot of fatigue here on this, but people are dying. That's 9 people died. Think about how much people freak out in this town and in this state when 4 people die of gun violence in Minneapolis on one Saturday night. 9 people died yesterday of COVID statewide. And that is, it might not be 9, it might be 3, it might be 6, it might be 12. But day after day after day, we have people dying. And it's still going on. And I guarantee you there are people that are dying in the last week or so who are like, I thought the pandemic was over. I guarantee it. COVID death toll now is 12,596. We should be over 12,600 tomorrow. Today's update includes case data that was reported the 24-hour period at 4 a.m. on Friday. According to the latest Metropolitan Council wastewater data, 32.4% of samples in its coverage area are BA2, while BA2121 has increased to 56% of all samples as of May 16th. In total, the BA2 family accounts for more than 88% of all samples. The Met Council covers about 2/3 of the metro area, serving 2 million people. But it's a good way to extrapolate the numbers out across the state. Through May 20th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 422. That's down from 442 reported on May 19th. Of those hospitalized, 36 people in intensive care. That's actually up from 33. 386 non-ICU care. That's down from 409. As of May 19th. Now, here's an interesting thing, because there's another story that's out today that I'll refer back to this number on. The number of people getting vaccinated has been going up, which is good. This is yay, go get vaccinated, please. Because first-time vaccinations just in the last week have probably gone up somewhere in the area of 5,000. More people have gotten their first vaccination shot. As of May 9th, the state reported that 3,914,064 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,709,010 people have completed the vaccine series. That number is also catching up to the as well. There's a lot of people that got their first shot. They're now getting that second shot, which is good. There are 2,547 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots, which includes all boosters. Total number of cases in Minnesota, and this is once again a gross undercount at this point, is 1,495,009. Even as a gross undercount, that it's going to still be basically a quarter of the state's population. That's insane. Wow. COVID-19 boosters, this is a Star Tribune story on it, have lowered rates of hospitalization and deaths in Minnesota, according to new state breakthrough infection data. Protection was greatest among seniors who, if unvaccinated, were 1.6 times more likely over the past 60 days to be hospitalized with COVID than fully vaccinated people. Unvaccinated seniors were 5 times more likely to be hospitalized than seniors who received a scheduled booster, the state did report as well. While real-time breakthrough data isn't a substitute for studies on vaccine efficiency, Minnesota Department of Health leaders said it hopefully motivates people to stay current with their shots and reduce their COVID-19 risks. It's a giant piece of the puzzle. Once again, we're kind of doing evaluations as we go here. But I want to repeat that. If you are unvaccinated, then there is still a shocking amount of Minnesotans who are unvaccinated because they think they're spitting their gumption is going to keep that vaccine, that virus away from me. Fools. If you are unvaccinated, you are five times more likely to go to the hospital than someone who is vaccinated and boosted. 5 times. And I, you know, if you're one of these fools on the right that sit there, well, what I'm seeing there is that there's still people who are vaccinated and boosted that go to the hospital too. Okay. For every, for every one person who is vaccinated and boosted who gets one of these breakthrough cases of COVID, especially one of these two subvariants that we've talked about, the BA2121 and the BA2. And then now we got BA4 and BA5 coming through too. Yeah, there are some breakthrough cases, but for every one person of them that goes through to the hospital, 5 unvaccinated people are going in. 5. Please get vaccinated. Absolutely, please. And I understand. We all have fatigue with this. Trust me. I've got tons of fatigue with this. I'm looking forward to the day where I can do this show and I can do a segment here which does not include COVID death numbers, COVID case counts. And sure, I could stop it, but basically and I hate saying this because this is really weird, I don't know if anyone else is doing it anymore. Sure, the Star Tribune has an occasional story. I'll give the credit to the Bring Me the News guys. Bring Me the News is still putting out the daily COVID numbers. But there's a lot of days Star Tribune doesn't seem to have a story on it. Or if it is, it's buried. I just think there's not a lot of people talking about it. And you have 9 people dying. And like I said, think about how absolutely crazy the media and the state goes when on a Friday night, 3 people are shot and killed in Minneapolis. Oh, it's insane. Oh, look at the chaos in Minneapolis. Oh, chaos. 9 people died today. 4 people on Friday, 6 people the day before that. Every single day we are having people die and no one seems to care. I've said this before about you go into small town America. I was over in Stillwater last Tuesday, and I was up at the Veterans Memorial there, which is right across from the old Washington County Courthouse. And I was looking at the number of people that were there, and I said, you look at all the people they've got listed on their memorial that have died in all these wars. It's nothing compared to how many people have died of COVID in that same community. In that same community, is anyone going to put up a memorial to them? All the loved ones we've lost to COVID, which is by far more than the amount of loved ones we've lost that are on any of those World War I or World War II memorials, Civil War memorials, if they're out there. Nope. It's just, people just don't want to care. And this is going to be one of those things where in decades, people are going to be like, wow, that was horrible. And a lot of people, I think, are going to have revisionist history. Oh, we all got through it. We all sacrificed. Dude, no. A lot of people are not doing the basic things they need to do to keep themselves safe. Please get vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, get vaccinated. If you got the first shot, get the second shot. If you got the second shot, get boosted. And if you've already got that first boost, get the second one, for goodness sakes. It's funny. Have you seen any far-right loon balls talking about magnetization, lizard blood, you know, someone controlling you with a microchip. Has anyone seen that? The lunacy has ended for them. They got their point across because they're just trying to make a political statement. The reality is now the other side still exists. Getting vaccinated saves your damn life. And I don't want you dead, and I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A shocking but predictable story on COVID when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. One more final story here on coronavirus update for today. Americans in counties that voted heavily for Donald Trump in 2020 were 2.26 times more likely to die of COVID-19 than counties that voted for Joe Biden, according to new analysis of data. Now, we have talked about this in Minnesota. We've talked about this on large, smaller scales, but this is one of the first major studies that has looked at this nationwide. The extra toll on Republican counties is significant, especially given that 1 million people have now died. So basically, if you want to look at it this way, if you are 2.26 times more likely to die of COVID than counties that for Joe Biden, that means out of the 1 million people that died, well, 2.26, probably looking at 330,000 people died who were in Democratic counties, but 670,000 people died in Republican counties. So, the study examined deaths from COVID-19 per 100,000 people in roughly 3,000 counties across the country. From May 2021, a time when most Americans could obtain vaccines, those living in counties that voted 60% or higher for Trump in 2020 had a 2.26 times the death rate of counties that voted in comparable percentages for Biden. Counties with higher share of Trump voters had even higher mortality rates. The more you believe Trump, the more you died. While COVID-19 death rates or regions are affected by several factors, including things like wealth and access to health care, death rates closely follow rates of vaccination, which Republican lawmakers, activists, and media personalities often railed against. Not only did they urge people to not get vaccinated, but often spread frightening disinformation about the vaccines. Yeah, who is exactly running for the Minnesota GOP governor? Oh, that's right. Yeah. According to an analysis released by Brown University this month, nearly 320,000 lives nationwide could have been saved if more people had chosen to get vaccinated. And that actually matches perfectly the numbers. So once again, this study is different from this Brown University study. The Brown University study says if more people got vaccinated, a third less people would die. Well, what do we see on the other study that says one out of, you know, for every one person that got sick and died in a Democratic county, 2.26 died? Yeah. If Republicans would have actually gone out there and told people, oh, for goodness sakes, yes, get vaccinated. Oh, for goodness sakes, we want you to live. Oh, yes, goodness sakes, we want you to survive. We could have saved, the Republicans could have saved, as according to Brown University, 320,000 people. 320,000 people could have been saved if we just had a more unified pro-vaccine message. Unbelievable. And by the way, that number probably matches up pretty well, too, with other countries and what they've seen, other countries that don't have a bunch of Trump maniacs running around screaming about, it's magnetizing you. They're trying to put a microchip in you and you're going to control you for hours. Political affiliation continues to be the largest predictor of vaccination status. According to the nonpartisan think tank, the Kaiser Foundation, in the study, 81% of adults were vaccinated in the counties that went strongly for Biden, compared to only 60% of adults in counties that went for Trump. God, wasn't there for, there was still a county here in Minnesota up by Brainerd, I think it was, that was under 50% vaccinated. Unbelievable. The Brown study found that the states that went most heavily for Trump, including West Virginia and Wyoming, had among the highest rates of preventable deaths. States that voted heavily for Biden, such as Massachusetts and Vermont, had among the lowest. Democratic areas initially suffered some of the highest death rates from the pandemic because COVID-19 first hit hardest the major metro areas, but Republican areas surpassed those death rates once vaccines became available and residents were opting not to get them. Many COVID-19 deaths occurred in 2020 before vaccines were available, but half the deaths after that could have been averted if all adults in the area were vaccinated, according to the Brown study. After the beginning of the pandemic, which hit cities hardest, statistics gathered in various studies have consistently demonstrated significantly higher COVID-19 cases and death rates in Republican areas over Democratic areas. Some researchers predict the discrepancy will lessen over the time, with larger numbers surviving the disease, decreasing their chances of death from subsequent bouts. But Harvard University epidemiologist William Hang fears that politicians could continue to use vaccinations as a wedge issue for popular gain and could next target all vaccines and seriously undermine America's health. It's part of the long-term damage that happens when you have politicians relentlessly trying to denigrate it and turn it into a political football. So, we are living in, I am 53 years old, all right? I'm not young. I remember a time, not that long ago, probably in the 90s, where, well, even into the 2000s, into the first decade of this century, where if it was determined that the advice you gave as a politician led to a 2-to-1 ratio of your own supporters dying over people on the other side of the aisle, that would have been the end of your political career. And as a matter of fact, people would be suing you. People would be, you know, trying to see, is there a way we can charge this person with a crime? Used to be. At the very least, your political career was annihilated. It was gone. There was no coming back from that. You just couldn't come back from that. Today, let's just be honest, there's a whole lot of Republican politicians who not only badmouth vaccines and insist, we know better, we got spit and gumption here to fight the virus, because the virus never killed anybody who was a Trump supporter, that kind of mentality. Funny story, though, a lot of those guys are long vaccinated, got boosted. We talked about that years ago when this whole thing, when the vaccine started coming out, there was going to be a lot of Republicans who are, when they started bad-mouthing it, who were going to be like, hey, guys, you know, can I get vaccinated? Can you keep it quiet? We got vaccinated. And there are some people who have insisted, oh, I've never gotten vaccinated. But there's a lot of people that will say, well, don't get vaccinated. They'll tell you, don't get vaccinated. Don't trust the vaccines. And someone said, well, you vaccinated. And the first thing out of the vaccine, how dare you question my vaccination status? Well, you're the one saying not to get vaccinated. So it would be pretty darn hypocritical of you to be vaccinated and telling everyone else not to be vaccinated. Just a little logic problem for you. I'm just saying, pointing out the truth. Here we are. You have now definitive proof that Republicans, through their irresponsibility, through their unproven arguments, through the lies, through their deception, have killed people in their pro-Republican counties at a tilt of 2.26 to 1 to the ones in the Democratic counties who basically are trying to keep everyone alive. And like I said, this should be the end of their political career. But yet, the other side of the aisle, they all win. Think about that. I want you to sit back and relax and just kind of comprehend this world that we live in now, that you can have politicians that have been proven to have basically through their advice and their for their statements and through their topics and what they have said, they have killed twice as many people in their own district with their irresponsibility than in the Democratic districts. And yet those people will not hold them accountable. First of all, I doubt they'll even see this story. And when we can talk about Fox News and OAN and Newsmax and all those things, let's go out to rural Minnesota. Let's go on out to that locally owned radio station out there who is owned by a far right radio group. Let's go on out to that local newspaper down there that's run by a far right radio group. They're not going to publish this. They have gleefully allowed. I mean, this was the kind of the narrative. They're not going to ever hear this story. Or if they do, if they somehow one night stumble across the story, at one side of it, they'll say, oh, well, they won't believe it. But the other reality is they probably will. And they just won't care. Think about that for a second. They will probably, many of them would probably say, well, sure, but I don't care. I'm still voting for the Republican. I have said many things here on this show. Very few of them I think are good, but one or two I've said that I was like, okay, that's spot on. And one of them is the standard Republican voter could come home, find Donald Trump having sex with their spouse, doesn't matter who, could find their Donald Trump in there having sex with their spouse, and the first words out of their mouth will be, damn Democrats, because they don't know any better anymore. They don't know any better. They are, for lack of a better way to say it, brainwashed. And they can sit there and say, sure, I lost grandma, and sure, I lost Uncle Pete, and sure, the neighbors across the street, both of them died, and then the neighbors two down from them, they had their husband died, and one of their kids got sick and was in the hospital for months. And then there's the guy that lives on the other side of me. He died. Thanks, Republicans. Keep voting that way. It's insanity. But we have to come to grips with what is actually happening. We have brainwashed. The Republicans have effectively brainwashed a third of the country. And it's not a surprise it's in rural America, because it's much harder in the metro areas to get that kind of control over the media. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You can go to some towns where it clearly is very much a Republican-only news outlet, but the reality is it's harder to do in the metro areas. But it's frighteningly easy to do in small towns. It's frighteningly easy to do. And they have done it. They only watch Fox News, Newsmax, OAN. They only have the only radio stations in town are talking about how those damn Democrats are going to do this. And I brought up last hour, I was talking about the ag bill. Every single House member voted against, a Republican House member voted against it. Every single one of them. It's a good bill. It does a lot of good things. Every single House Republican voted against it. But these people, the reality doesn't matter anymore. For God's sakes, they won't even acknowledge, sweet Jesus, the advice for that Republican was to not get vaccinated, and we've lost twice as many people in our district as the Democrats did? Oh, I'm never voting for him again. If they're not going to go do that, of course they're not going to hold the person accountable who gleefully and proudly voted against the bill when they claim, I passed this bill. They're just going to say, yep, he passed the bill. He changed his letter from an R to a D for one vote. He voted with, and then he tricked them. It was all, see, they did a swap day. That's how it happened. Pete Stauber did the same thing up in the 8th District. Stauber did the same thing. When the infrastructure bill passed, he was trying to take credit and you know, the pats on the back for passing it. He voted against the bill. He voted against the bill. If we cannot figure out a way to wake up these voters. And with all due respect to a lot of the great Democrats of the day that we've had out in rural Minnesota who are talking about, I'm going out there, I'm knocking on doors, I'm doing this. I commend you. That's one way to try to get it done. But the reality is that these people, unless they get exposed to a more diverse news selection and are willing to accept it, doesn't mean it's like, of course, the internet's out there. There are a lot of different news outlets that are different than far-right one. But the Republican voter won't ever go to one. It's like the movie Don't Look Up, and I don't want to spoil it too much, but in the title, they say, don't look up. And that becomes a chant for the Trump-esque Republican, or I'm presuming right-leaning thing is, don't look up. And then one day, the guy looks up and is like, wait a minute, there's a meteor headed our way, or a comet, or whatever it was. It's funny. But that is the level of control the modern Republican Party has over their voters. They don't care. It blows my mind in 2020, after all the embarrassment, after all the things that clearly negated Donald Trump from ever being able to hold office ever again, they all show, all of them, including all those suburban Republicans who sat there and said, I'm not on board with these far-right loon balls of Trump's. I'm just not on board with that. And then it came to time to vote, and they could not stop themselves. Democrats have a really big problem, and I wish it was something we could fix via door knocking and phone banking and going out there and introducing ourselves. But the reality is these people are brainwashed. And like I said, the only evidence you'll need to see is this election cycle in those Republican districts, which via the advice that the Republicans gave them, died at a 2.26% higher rate than in Democratic areas, which should be the negator. For God's sakes, you are not helping us if you're killing us off at a twice the hilt, a two-for-one hilt, as they are in the Democratic areas, because they're listening to the medicine and the science. If they don't hold them accountable for that, which they won't, then how the hell are you going to wake these people up? Unless you, I don't know, get some left-leaning money and go out and buy these far-right news outlets and just shut them down. I don't know. It is terrifying to me when you see the reality as it's displayed like this, and zero accountability. Because, well, the Democrats, they're still worse. I mean, sure, yeah, we stormed the Capitol. We tried to overthrow things. And, yeah, we gave them advice on that, not to get vaccinated and all these horrible things. But they're killing babies in the basements of pizza parlors that don't have basements. So, I'm still on the right side. It is freakishly disturbing. It really is. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll touch on that. Simpsons did something about this last night. I'll touch on that as well here in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I don't know if you saw that whole thing on The Simpsons, where they're talking about the wiping out of the middle class. But it was pretty spot on. Hugh Jackman and those guys, it was really spot on. And the truth is, you want a great example of it. Let's look at this. In case you're missing the point of what's going on in this country right now on the economic side, basically, there people are trying to kill the middle class. Now, they might not be sitting up and waking every day, it's like, time to kill the middle class. But they have now, because of greed, become so engaged in policies that are detrimental to 90 to 95% of us, that is going to be the outcome, that we're going to return to a day. And the idea that we've always been a capitalist country, I mean, please, we haven't been. It's a convenient thing to say when you're the white people in charge making all the money. But the reality is, you go back to the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, we were company towns. where an individual basically ruled the town, and God forbid if you got on their bad side, you couldn't get food in that town, you couldn't get your money out of the bank, you couldn't sell your house, you were left destitute. And it was the labor movement of America that started in the 1900s, in the 1920s and 30s and into the 40s, that really changed everything. And the time in this country when we were the most capitalist was the 1940s, although once again, understandably not for any minorities, for the white population. I'll be the first to say that. But the best crack we had at it was the 1940s and 1950s into the 60s, when a portion of the population was able to work their way out of poverty with a good paying job. We built the suburbs. We gave people the right people for the first time could buy a house. They could send a kid to college. They could go on a vacation every year. They could own a car. That was the time. And since that time, the people that basically could, you know, that lost, the entities that lost that money, that lost that amount of money that was gained during the times when they controlled everything, started working their way to try to whittle away at it, get rid of the labor industry, get rid of the unions, get rid of all that stuff so no one is there to protect your wages, then pass draconian bills to cut your wages and cut your benefits to where the wages and benefits haven't been kept up to speed since the 1980s when the Republicans came in there and started doing that. The idea of owning a suburban house, for God's sakes, these what are supposed to be starter homes now cost $400,000. And before anyone can buy them, some company is buying them so they can rent them out, effectively taking away the ability of middle-class America to be able to build wealth and equity through their homes. They have gotten rid, they raised the gas prices and they raised the food prices. Why? Because the labor market said, you know what, we're tired of crap wages and we want to get paid more. And they say, okay, fine, we're going to take that money back, only we'll take it back the long way, be it charging you for gas and charging you for groceries. They've done this across the board because capitalism doesn't work when you have these insanely wealthy people dictating how the rest of us are going to live. It becomes a two-class tiered system, the haves and the have-nots, and the vast majority of us are in the have-not category. And it's all due to conservative Republican policies. This has been conservative Republican policies that have killed this country and have killed the middle class. Absolutely. And every Republican sits there, Joe Biden. No, Joe Biden doesn't do gas prices. He's in charge of food prices. That's corporate America that's doing that. He's not buying up every house that's in the suburbs and turning them into rental properties. That's corporate America that's doing that. He's not keeping your wages down. He's not keeping your salary down, getting rid of your benefits. That's corporate America. And if you dare rear back and say, we've had enough, they've already got a game plan to take that money back. But yet, will any Republican who has been screwed over by these Republican policies hold a Republican responsible come election time? Nope. They'll keep blindly voting for them. Brainwashing. That's what it does for you. Native Roots Radio up next. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.